Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Welcome to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, your primetime destination for bold conversations, unfiltered truth, and real-life inspiration. I'm your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, broadcasting live from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Tonight's episode is sponsored by Talkspace, the leading online therapy platform connecting you with licensed therapists anytime, anywhere. Whether you're navigating grief, trauma, anxiety, or just need someone to talk to, Talkspace makes it easier to put your mental health first. Visit Talkspace.com to learn more, and I'll share more details about our sponsor later in the show. So as we approach the end of May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month, and because this is the last episode of May, I didn't want to miss this opportunity to discuss mental health, and not just from a cursory, shallow viewpoint. I'd really like for us to have the uncomfortable conversation that many of us try to avoid. So if you feel like you're not in the right headspace right now for a possibly uncomfortable discussion about mental health, or you know there are parts of your life that you're not quite ready to face, then this may be your cue to hit pause and maybe come back for the replay when you feel ready to listen. I have a disclaimer for this show that I want to read. The views and opinions expressed on Live with Dr. Andre Jerry are solely those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Artist First Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. I am not a licensed therapist, counselor, or mental health practitioner. The content shared on this program is for informational and conversational purposes only and should not be construed as medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the guidance from a qualified healthcare professional. And any questions you may have regarding your mental health or medical condition, run that through your doctor. And listener discretion is advised. Okay? So listen, before we dive into this episode, I want to make something very, very clear. Mental illness is not a character flaw. It's not a weakness. It's not a punchline. This is something that's real, and it affects people's lives substantially. And it's time that we stop hiding behind silence and sarcasm and shame. Tonight, I may inject some humor here and there just to sort of lighten the mood and make the content a little bit more digestible to the extent that I can. But I do understand the seriousness of this subject matter. Tonight's show is going to be about healing. And it's my hope that this conversation that we're going to have, that we all give ourselves and each other permission to be human and to feel and to heal. Okay, so let's get started. So the theme for tonight's show is simple, but it's kind of heavy. We need to talk. No one likes to hear that phrase, right? We need to talk, but we really do. And not just about mental health, but about family, generational cycles, and all the stuff that we've been taught to keep quiet. You see, mental illness is not always what we think it is. It's not those dramatic breakdowns that we see in the movies or on reality TV. It's not that. Sometimes it's more subtle. It's the friend who ghosted you, or maybe it's your cousin who whores, or the neighbor that never leaves their house. Or it could be your boss whose ego is so fragile that it holds your whole department back. You see, we're surrounded by it, and sometimes it's in us. But we don't call things what it is because a lot of times we normalize dysfunction. We say, oh, that's just how she is, or, you know, he's always been a little off or a little strange, and we just kind of brush it aside. But tonight we're going to take a pause from that. We're going to talk because mental illness is not, it's not just something that shows up in the psychiatric hospitals. It's in our group chats. It's in the church, it's in our bedrooms, it may be even right in front of the mirror. Mental health isn't just about diagnosis. It's all those conversations we avoid that we know we need to have. It's the healing that we postpone. and the shame that we carry until it eats us alive. It's the unspoken grief, the quiet breakdowns, and the way we stop showing up for ourselves because we're too busy or we're pretending like everything is fine. So this episode just isn't important because it's the last week of Mental Health Awareness Month and all of that. This is a necessary episode because mental health affects all of us. Whether you're living with a mental condition yourself or you're loving someone who may have a mental condition or maybe working next to someone who's struggling silently, it's everywhere. You know, even if you think mental illness doesn't run in your family or so you think, chances are you've encountered it without even realizing it. It might be happening right under your nose in a relationship with a friend or a family member. And, you know, you've just been, maybe you've been feeling a little off for a while and you don't really know what name to put to it, but something's there. If you need a visual for what mental illness is, just scroll through TikTok. I don't know what it is about TikTok in particular, but seriously, scroll through TikTok. You'll see mental illness almost in every swipe. It'll be disguised as jokes and different dances or whatever, trauma bonding, all sorts of stuff. But it's apparent that people are struggling. And just because it's visible, it doesn't mean that it's understood or it's diagnosed. And contrary to popular belief, mental illness doesn't always look like how we picture it in TV, like someone rocking in a corner mumbling to themselves, or, you know, a drunk homeless person yelling at traffic, or a woman who's clutching a wine bottle and she's spiraling. You know, it doesn't always look that way. Sometimes mental illness can look like not wanting to get out of the bed, or persistent poor hygiene and lack of grooming, not being able to sleep, sleeping way too much, chronic fatigue with no type of medical explanation behind it, unexplainable body aches and pains, social withdrawal, avoiding phone calls, irritability over very small things, making plans and then canceling those plans for no reason, being overwhelmed by simple, mundane, everyday tasks. It could look like overeating or some type of extreme weight loss or appetite loss. It could be a hard time focusing or staying organized or just being emotionally numb, you know what I mean, and zoned out. These aren't quirks or bad habits. These are symptoms. These are signs, and these are cries for help. Just like some of these more recognizable conditions like postpartum, a lot of women go through that, PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorders, compulsive gambling, compulsive shopping, binge eating, or any type of disordered eating pattern, hypochondria. You know, these are real diagnosable things, and they're not character flaws. So tonight we're going to call out all the things that are usually left unsaid. We're going to unbox what's been buried, and we're going to give ourselves permission to voice a lot of the hurts that we have felt, you know, so we can finally start to heal, because you can't heal what you're to confront. So let's talk about a few statistics that are worth mentioning, because these are important. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. experience mental illness each year. So that equates to about 57 million people. Okay? And listen to this one. More than 50% of Americans will be diagnosed with a mental illness or a mental disorder at some point in their lifetime. You see? So those are important statistics because it reinforces that mental health is not just a trending topic. It's a mirror. You know, so this is nothing to be ashamed about. This impacts a lot of people and a lot of families. And whether you're looking at yourself or someone you love, you owe it to yourself to care enough about mental health awareness. And you owe it to the people in your life to at least listen and is learn as much as you can about mental health awareness so you can act and take action for the people that you may want to help or for yourself even. You know, and even if you're not personally affected by mental illness, I want you to stay tuned anyway, because chances are something you may hear tonight might help you help somebody else tomorrow. Okay, so on this show, I always try to, as much as I can, share my life experience with you all. And not just the good stuff and the glamorous stuff. I'm talking about the not so good, the sometimes embarrassing stuff. I don't do that for sympathy, but I do it so that you can kind of see yourself in my story and maybe avoid a few of the mistakes I've made in my life. Or at least be encouraged by the fact that, yeah, I went through some stuff, but I made it out. And I'm getting some feedback that we're having some audio issues. So let's take a quick minute break or so. We'll pick up on our conversation when we come back. All right, guys. Sorry about that. This is live radio, so sometimes audio issues happen. So we're going to try to pick up where things got kind of choppy. So bear with me. Thanks for staying tuned. So like I was saying before we got interrupted, on this show, I always try to, whenever I can, share my life experiences with you all. And like I said before, not just the good stuff and the glamorous stuff, but some of the stuff that's embarrassing. Because a lot of people you may be able to see yourself in my story and avoid some of the mistakes that I've made in my life, you know, or be encouraged by the fact that I may have went through some things, but I made it on the other side of it. And so this episode is going to be no different. I've had my own battle with mental illness, and it's not just me. Mental illness runs in my family. And I'm not just talking about a couple of people. I mean, the majority of my family. And I trace a lot of that back to my grandmother. Unfortunately, she suffered from schizophrenia for most of her life. And, you know, I don't know for certain if mental illness predated her with someone else maybe in her line. But on my grandmother's side or my mother's side, that's as far as I've been able to track it is back to my grandmother. Now, my grandmother, she had 9 daughters. So just let that sink in for a moment. 9 girls who were being raised in a home where their mother had untreated schizophrenia. And if you just think about the trauma that they must have endured, I'm sure it was unimaginable sometimes. If you guys have ever seen the movie Precious, then you'll remember the character Mary Jones, who was portrayed by Monique. Now, as intense as that character was, she actually reminded me a lot of my grandmother, and not so much in terms of the behavior. Put the behavior aside, I'm more so talking about the level of mental illness that that character had. You know, it was pretty severe. And I know that may be hard for a lot of people in my family to hear, but I say that from the unique perspective of someone who actually lived with his grandmother for nearly a decade, you know. But don't get me wrong, she had her good days and moments where she was in good spirits just like anyone else. Her laugh was infectious. I'll always remember her laugh. But yeah, I saw a lot of things. I heard a lot of things and experienced a lot of things too. And I may not have been around back in the day when my grandmother was raising her daughters back in the 50s and 60s, but I lived under the same roof with her decades later. And she was still a force. So I can only imagine how much more intense she was back when she was younger. And so that's why my heart really does go out to my mom and her sisters, because you can't live through that kind of instability and not come out with some wounds, emotional wounds, psychological wounds, spiritual wounds, you know. And I can just hear some people in my family saying, "Yeah, Andre, shut up. You weren't even there. How would you know?" And yeah, I get all of that. But like I said, again, I lived with her. I didn't just visit my grandmother, I lived with her. And actually, I may be the only one of her grandchildren who lived with her. I don't know, I'm sure someone in my family will correct me if I'm wrong, but I know what I'm talking about. And when I say mental illness is rampant in my family, that's not an attack, it's just the truth. You know, that's my acknowledgement of the cards we were all handed. And again, it's nothing that any of us should feel ashamed about, but it's time to finally address certain things and put it out in the open and not make it this dirty little secret anymore. You know, someone's got to lead to the the discussion on the topic and uncover all of the mess and remove the shame and the stigma from mental illness. And not just in my family, but in a lot of other families as well. So my family, like many Black families, have a history of keeping secrets. We bury our pain. We avoid hard conversations. We don't name the obvious. And I used to be a part of that whole cycle. But today I know a little bit better. And I know that there's no healing without being honest. We've all heard the saying that you're only as sick as your secrets. Well, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. When you hold in pain, when you suppress trauma, it doesn't go away. It just festers. And it becomes depression or anxiety, rage, self-hate. And it can morph into physical illness, too. It can sabotage your relationships. It can rob you of your joy. So many things. So back to my grandmother. She raised kids back during a time when Black folks didn't have access to therapy, especially not in rural Georgia. Back then, you were lucky to see a doctor or a nurse at all, let alone talking about a therapist. You know, mental health awareness wasn't in the vocabulary back then. People didn't talk about being raped or molested or abused at home. You just survived the best you could. You shut the hell up about whatever you were going through and you just coped. You moved on, you got married, you had kids, and whether consciously or unconsciously, you passed those behaviors down to your children. And when I say behaviors, I'm talking about the behavior that results from the trauma you endured as a child. So all that self-care, wellness, mental health awareness, all that stuff, none of that was in the lexicon back then. That was a luxury. In rural Georgia, people just didn't have the mental health tools that we all have now. All they had back then was trauma and the church. And don't even get me started on the church. But, you know, many of them ended up raising their children through the filter of that trauma. Not because they were bad people or anything. It's just they were broken too. And when you're in it, when it's happening, you don't really understand it as trauma when it's happening. You just sort of think, this is life. I just got to deal with it. It's like my grandmother and her daughters. I won't pretend to know every single detail about, you know, what it was like for them growing up, but I do know what my mother shared with us. She didn't tell us everything, but there's some things she shared. One of those things was that her mom never told her, I love you. Imagine growing up and not hearing those words from anyone. Imagine what that does to a child's sense of worth. It has to break something deep inside you. But this is what I admired about my mom. She made a decision. She told herself that when she had kids, she was going to break that cycle. So no matter how difficult it would be, and I'm sure it was for her at first, but she made it a point to make sure she told all of her children, I love you. And she didn't just tell us that. She told us that often. And by the time I came around, she was able to say it effortlessly. She told me every day she loved me. You know, sometimes it felt like she said it too much. But now I give anything to hear her say it just one more time. But yeah, I remember hearing my mom say that. She said it to me. She said it to her sisters. Maybe not all of them, but I definitely heard her say it to Honey, to Bay, Tar. She said it to Dale. Dale was her closest sister, and Dale is my favorite aunt. And but yeah, even though my mom didn't verbalize it, I sort of knew what she was doing. She was trying to interrupt a pattern of behavior with her sister. She was trying to normalize showing love and showing affection and normalize hearing the words, I love you. Because when you grow up not hearing that, I can imagine when someone finally does say it to you, you can feel sort of awkward or uncomfortable or just foreign. So I really think that was intentional on her part. You know, and maybe some of that energy trickled down. Maybe that made it easier for her sisters to say it to their kids. I don't know. There's something I always wonder about. Like, how many people grew up without hearing the words, I love you, from their parents. It was normal for me, but it may not have been normal for a lot of people. I just wonder, does that still happen with these new parents? Because to me, it just feels so outdated. Like, I would like to hope that we've all evolved past that type of archaic parenting where you're not saying I love you to your kids. I would hope that people understand how damaging that is for children not to hear that on a regular basis. I don't know. Maybe some of my cousins have dealt with that. Or, you know, maybe some parents still think saying I love you isn't necessary. Maybe they feel like it's just understood that, yeah, I love you. But children need to hear it. Those three words are foundational. When those three words are missing from a child's life, it leaves a gap that can create insecurity and all types of stuff, self-sabotage, emotional detachment. You know, that type of brokenness just doesn't fade away. It kind of follows you all through your life. And I'm sure it shows up in how you parent your own children and how you love in your relationships and just how you show up in the world. But maybe that wasn't your issue. Maybe your trauma was different. Maybe your trauma showed up in the way you were treated or spoken to. Maybe you were neglected or shamed or something. And if you're carrying that type of pain, if you're still hurting from that type of stuff, I want to tell you that it's okay. You're definitely not alone. You remember the statistics I read earlier. And you're able to heal from that stuff. But here's the thing, healing takes work. It's not easy. That's why so many people run from it. I know that at least some of my cousins have strained relationships with their mothers, their parents. And that's not throwing shade at nobody. It's just a reality. I think all of my aunts did the very best they could given the cards they were dealt. But generational pain doesn't get fixed with good intentions. It gets fixed by confronting things and doing the work. And like I said, that's the difficult part. And that's why so many people avoid it. Facing your trauma means having to confront everything that you've kept hidden away. It means reopening those old wounds and crying and breaking down and, you know, feeling those same things that you buried years and years ago, things you thought that you were over and past. And I won't lie to you, it's really hard. It hurts. It's like being re-traumatized all over again. But like I said before, you can't heal what you won't face. So it doesn't matter if you were raped, molested, bullied, rejected, abused, given up for adoption, falsely accused, abandoned, ostracized, or ridiculed for being different, whatever it is, you don't have to carry that stuff forever. If you're tired of suffering and tired of popping pills, tired of being depressed and angry all the time, tired of pushing people away, then this is really a moment for you. Really confront that stuff. Talk to someone about it. A licensed therapist if you can, but if you can't, a pastor, it doesn't matter, a friend, a sibling, a cousin, just as long as it's someone that you trust, someone that's going to listen and have your back and not judge you, and someone that's going to help you to forgive, because that's the sauce right there. Forgiveness is where all the healing is going to begin. You have to forgive the people who hurt you, and you have to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself for carrying the burden for all those decades. You have to forgive yourself for not reacting the way you wish you would have reacted. You have to forgive yourself for staying silent and for not speaking up and speaking out about your pain. You got to forgive yourself for just surviving the best way you knew how at the time. Forgiveness is like the capstone in your healing journey. It's not something you can get right to. You have to work your way up to that. But forgiveness is going to be what allows you to finally have closure. And remember what I said about closure. I said this in previous shows. Closure is an inside job. That's something I learned in therapy. And I used to think that closure was something that I had to rely on somebody else for, but that's not true at all. Closure is an inside job. It doesn't matter if the person is living, if they're dead, if they're speaking to you, not speaking to you. You create closure through forgiveness and reframing the way that you tell the story of what happened to you. And I'll talk more about that in the next segment. I'll say one of the most pivotal breakthroughs in my healing journey came when my therapist helped me to finally confront and heal from an incident that haunted me for decades. And this incident was tied to bullying. Now, if you follow the show, you've probably heard me talk about how I was bullied all through school. But back then when it was happening, I never told anyone. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my teachers. None of my friends who went to my other schools or whatever, none of them knew. I didn't talk to my cousins about it. I just kept that pain locked away until I was an adult. But there was one moment that left an especially deep scar on me. And I've shared this story before, but it bears repeating because somebody out there might still be carrying something similar. But very briefly, okay, so in seventh grade during lunch period, I was slapped in the face in front of the entire school. It was actually a dare. If you remember earlier this month in the Toxic Friends episode, I talked about how me and my childhood best friend, John, how we came to be friends. You know, he was actually one of the people in school who used to bully me every day. And one day I confronted him about it, you know, for always picking on me. We almost got in a fight, and somehow we became best friends after that. Well, fast forward to the lunchroom scene, which was later that same school year. It was in seventh grade. I'm sitting across from John. We're all in the lunchroom. John was always very popular, by the way. So all the cool kids sat around John. He was always popular. So, you know, I kind of went from being the nerd everybody picked on to sitting with the popular kids. So things were starting to look a little bit better for me, or so I thought. Well, and I never shared this part of the story before, but John was actually the person who dared the other kid, whose name was Alfonso. I'll never forget his name. John is the one who dared Alfonso to slap me. Ain't that something? The person who I befriended, the person I thought was my new best friend, dared someone to slap me. So looking back, John was always like a piece of shit and a bad friend to me. He showed me who he was from day one. Why I didn't see it all these years is beyond me. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. So yeah, John was like, I dare you to go over there and slap Andre. He said it a different way, but I'm trying not to use profanity. But he said, I bet you he won't hit you back. Andre is all talk. And I guess he was talking about when we almost fought earlier that year, but even back then, neither one of us threw a punch. So I don't know. I don't know what was in his mind back then. But the kid, Alfonso, he was kind of like me. He wasn't one of the popular kids. He was sort of on the fringe like I was, probably seeking the same acceptance that I was seeking back then. So, of course, when one of the most popular guys in school befriends you and lets you sit with his group at lunch, and, you know, if he dares you to do something out of peer pressure, you're just, you know, and being that young, you're probably going to do it. But meanwhile, me, I'm confused because my so-called best friend is betraying me in real time. And then you got Alfonso, who actually got up and was walking over to slap me. Mind you, the entire lunchroom is watching this whole thing play out. And I'm looking at Alfonso heading towards me and giving him this look like, I wish you would. I wish you would. And right when he got close to me, I stood up. It seemed like everybody was taller than me back then. But anyway, I stood up like, what? And he slapped me. And I just froze. I didn't hit him back. We didn't start fighting, nothing. I just stood there. And the entire school erupted in laughter. I can still hear the laughter in my mind. You want to talk about embarrassing? I was mortified. And a slap didn't even hurt. It didn't hurt physically. It was just the humiliation. It was the public shaming of it. I felt like my dignity and my manhood was just snatched in front of everybody. And that moment shattered whatever little fragile self-esteem I had at the time. I remember thinking, I'm never going to live this down. It just became the moment that defined me, or so I thought. And for years, I blamed myself. Not the boy who hit me, not Alfonso, but I blamed myself for not defending myself, not hitting him back. And that all that guilt, it just metastasized into shame and eventually rage. And it just colored everything in my life. It colored how I approached my friendships, how I interacted with my family, my romantic relationships later in life. It really hardened me. And it made me really defensive and argumentative and angry. I was always ready to go off about something. Not because I wanted to, but just because I just swore that no one would ever humiliate me like that ever again. So, yeah, that really did a number on me psychologically. And actually, that slap wasn't the only trauma I had suffered. Around that same time, I was experiencing another trauma that was like 10 times worse than this bullying stuff. I was catching hell from all sides at age 13. I don't know what it was about age 13, but that was just the age from hell for me. It's like my whole world fell apart at age 13. That's why I always chuckle when people call me like the golden child, the golden boy, and think I've had this easy breezy life or whatever. People don't have a clue of the things I've had to live through. And the ones that think they know a little bit, they don't even know the half of it. One day I'm finally going to sit down and write a book about my life. I have the time now, so I'm going to finally sit down and do it. But the point I'm trying to make is that I was carrying a lot of trauma at a very early age. And at the time, like I said before, you don't realize it's trauma. You just think of it as an unfortunate circumstance that you just have to contend with. So a lot of times you don't even know to ask for help. Now, I'm off the bullying stuff. I'm going to talk about the other stuff now. So in my case, because of the unique nature of the other trauma or traumas that I was experiencing and circumstances beyond my control, being a minor and all of that, I was forced to seek counseling. And I'm not going to get into what a disaster my so-called therapy was, but just imagine being 13 years old and suffering trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. And I'm not talking about small stuff. Fuck the bullying at this point. That was like hopscotch compared to the other stuff I was dealing with. And although I was blessed to have parents who had the resources to put me into counseling and all of that, they didn't know what they were signing me up for. They didn't. As an adult, I can appreciate the position they were in. So I never really blamed them for anything, even back then. I never blamed anyone involved, actually. I don't know why. It would have been very understandable for me to play the victim card. I was young. I was innocent. Yeah, I was a brat. Everyone knows I was a spoiled brat, but I never bothered anybody. I wasn't a bad kid. I could be a little mischievous at times, but I was a good kid. But I was just getting hammered with trauma after trauma. But, you know, even as a child, on some level, I just somehow knew that as unfortunate as all of this is, it's not really anyone's fault. Everyone who was involved in that whole situation, I feel like they did the best they could at the time. Again, I don't know how I was able to discern that at such a young age, but I did. And so I just absorbed all of that trauma and I compartmentalized it away somewhere. And I just didn't deal with it. And I just went along and I pretended like it didn't happen. And I just tried to be a kid. I just tried to be a normal kid. And then maybe a year later, after things had settled down and things were somewhat going back to normal for me, it happened all over again. The same thing. And by that time, I was just numb. I remember riding in the car with my mom on the way from school, and this was right after it had happened again. And she asked me how I felt. And I might cry, but it's okay. But I'll never forget what I said to her when she asked me how I felt. I just kept looking straight ahead. I didn't even turn to look at her, but I could tell she was looking at me. And I just shrugged my shoulders and I said, "I'm okay." That's all I said. Because I knew she was sad for me, and I always hated seeing my mom cry. So I lied and I said that I was okay. But I wasn't okay. My heart and my spirit was broken, and I was angry. I was so angry and hurt and sad. But I just held it all in because I knew if I didn't, then it would have torn my family apart. And I knew it. But I wanted to scream. I just wanted to be like, how did you let this happen to me again? Why isn't anybody protecting me? I felt betrayed. I felt like, what did I ever do to deserve this? But I didn't say any of that. I just pretended to be okay. And I compartmentalized it away like I did with all my other trauma. And I just put it someplace where I didn't have to deal with it. But what I didn't realize at the time was that all that anger and rage and resentment and disappointment and sadness, even though I didn't express it outwardly, it was still inside me. And those types of negative, toxic emotions aren't meant to stay trapped in your body like that. It's going to come out in some kind of way. It's going to come out. It's going to come out as a mental illness. It's going to come out as a disease, drug abuse, alcoholism, anger issues, promiscuity, isolation, thrill seeking, sexual identity issues. These are all things I had to deal with as a result of my trauma and not facing it head on and not getting therapy. For someone else, it may be different. Your unhealed trauma may manifest differently. It may be something like, you know, a lot of people cut themselves, or they're a compulsive liar, or they hoard, or they're tired all the time, or you develop eating disorders or shopping addictions, or you're just vindictive and hateful and mean, or you hate women, you hate men, you got low self-esteem, you push people away, all types of stuff. Everybody's different. It's going to manifest differently. So what is it for you? How is unhealed trauma manifesting in your life? I want you to really think about that, because until you come to terms with this stuff that you've been burying, until you face it head on, you never are going to have the life that you truly, truly desire and that you deserve. You may get the big fancy house and the cars and all of that, but what good is it if you're going to be miserable every day and popping pills just to feel halfway normal? Or maybe you're so broken, you end up dating and marrying somebody just as broken as you. And then you end up in this toxic, lonely mess of a relationship. Or you convince yourself that you don't want to be married. You don't even want to fool with it. But deep down, you know how toxic and hateful you are. And that nobody is ever going to put up with type of mess. Not any self-respecting person anyway. You know, I could go on and on about how this stuff manifests. But the principle applies to everybody. Trauma, all trauma is just trapped energy. Trapped negative energy with no place to go. It needs a constructive outlet. Mine has always been writing and speaking and performing and things like that. For someone else, it might be sports or painting or exercising, video games, whatever. But find a healthy outlet to channel your pain so that these negative emotions can get out of your body, to get out of your body and not end up causing cancer and mental illnesses and degrading your life to the point where everything just seems to be falling apart around you. Don't hoard and shop and drink and eat yourself to oblivion just to cope. All those are self-destructive behaviors, and that's only going to compound your pain. Always remember this. If you don't eventually deal with your trauma, it will eventually deal with you. So deal with it now, deal with it later, you know? Okay, I know that was a lot to take in. I'm going to take a quick one-minute break. So I know this is some heavy stuff, but it's a necessary topic. So let's just take a quick one-minute break, maybe get another glass of wine. And when we come back, I'm going to pivot, and I'm going to talk about some practical steps that you can start taking today to start your healing journey. Okay? So stick around. Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. Thank you for hanging in there with me. If you came back for segment two, I'm really proud of you, because I know mental health is not a fun topic to discuss, but I commend you for taking your mental health, or the mental health of those you love, seriously. So yeah, that first segment was heavy, but like I said, it was necessary. But now I want to take everything that we unpacked and talk about how we move forward and how we begin the healing process, especially when the wounds run really deep and the trauma feels like it's permanent. Okay, so let's get back into it. So I've done a lot of the inner work. I've confronted most, if not all, of my trauma head on. And I've been intentional about uprooting a lot of the dysfunctional patterns that kind of ran my life for way too long. So between therapy and executive coaching, I really have noticed a real shift. You know, I don't get triggered like I used to. I'm not argumentative anymore. I can sit in agreement, or disagreement rather, with someone without it turning into this, you know, weird battle of the egos type thing. And that I used to have the last word on everything. I had to be the one in the right. You know, but now none of that stuff is no longer important to me. What I care about now at age 46 is peace. My peace is what matters. So I just let people believe whatever they want to believe. I let them feel how they want to feel. If they're committed to misunderstanding me, let them. If they're not ready to face reality, that's not my assignment. You know, a lot of folks are living in delusions and denial, but that's okay. That's their journey. So I've come a long way, and like I always say, for the most part, I try to stay in my lane. I leave people alone, but I'm still human. You know, everybody has a line. So recently someone in my family kept pressing me to to have a conversation that I wasn't quite ready to have. And it's nothing trauma related or anything like that. This is about a problem that I initially agreed to fix, but I realized that I didn't want to. I didn't want to because it wasn't my problem to begin with. It didn't involve me. I had no business being in the middle of it. So over the years, I've done some deep self-reflection. And one thing I've come to recognize with myself is this. I kind of have this strange thing going on with success guilt and a savior complex when it comes to my family. And to be honest, I'm still working through that. If I'm being honest. The success guilt doesn't stem from trauma. It's more about what happens when you've achieved a level of success that others around you haven't. If you don't address it, it will cause you to self-sabotage and question whether you deserve what you've worked for. It can lead down the road of people-pleasing and dimming your own light so others feel uncomfortable, overcompensating to sort of ease the guilt about someone else's struggle. I've danced with all of that type of stuff. Now, the savior complex, that's a little deeper. That's more psychological. It's like a deep-rooted need to rescue and fix and protect people, even if it's at your own expense. And that is tied to trauma. So remember the story I shared earlier about riding in the car with my mom after something traumatic happened to me when I was 13? When she asked how I felt, I said I'm okay. Not because I was, it was because I didn't want to see her cry. I just wanted her to be okay. I knew she was sad for me, and I just wanted her to be okay. And that right there, that was the beginning. I've been playing emotional caretaker ever since I was 13 years old. I'm 46 now. At what point do you say enough is enough? That's why therapy is important, because it helps you to put the pieces together and identify those emotional contracts you signed unknowingly when you were a child. And it helps you put a name to some of those destructive behaviors that feel normal, but they're actually nothing but survival mechanisms. For me, that was success guilt and the savior complex. And that's one of the last remnants of my trauma that I'm still in the process of purging myself from. So yeah, I changed my mind about helping to fix something that wasn't mine to fix. And eventually I was going to communicate that. I was, but I was going to do it on my time. You know, I just retired. I just moved to Puerto Rico, not, you know, 2 months ago. I'm still adjusting to this whole new chapter in my life. I've got things to figure out. You know, I got to figure out private health insurance. I got my show that, you know, it's on a weekly basis now. I just have a whole new life. So you just have to give me a moment to kind of settle into it. But instead of respecting that, it just kept pressing and pushing and trying to force a conversation I wasn't ready to have. And when you do that, eventually I push back. So not only did I address the issue that they brought up, I also unpacked a few other things that have been sitting on me. And I'm just going to say this for everybody. Don't try to force a conversation with someone who's not ready to have it. Don't do that, because you might open the door to something that you're not prepared to deal with. You might start a dialogue that you're not yet emotionally equipped to navigate. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So a better approach for things like that is, if you need to have a sensitive or potentially loaded conversation with someone, just try saying something like, hey, is now a good time to talk about X, Y, and Z? They're either going to say yes or no. If they say no, then just follow up with, okay, well, when would be a better time for us to talk? if you phrase it that way, it lets the other person know that, okay, what this other person has to say, it matters to them, but you also respect the other person's boundaries. Because, you know, real healing, real connection, real growth is going to start with mutual respect. You can't force things on people. So if you've been listening to this show for almost the past hour, I know you're probably feeling stirred up and convicted on some things, and you might be ready to start your own healing journey. So this is the part where I really want you to kind of lean in, because I'm going to talk about a few things that will really help you to jumpstart your healing journey, okay? So if you're ready to do this, the first thing I invite you to do is to find yourself a mental health practitioner that you can vibe with. For me, I like for, and some people are not going to like this, but whatever. For me, I like for my doctors and therapists and coaches, I like for them to be black men, okay? There's nothing racist about that. I'm a black man. I feel like I would relate better to another black man. That's all it is. I'm not saying you have to be that way. I'm just saying that's me, okay? But as long as it's someone that you vibe with, all right? And if you're thinking something like, you know, therapy is expensive and all of that, I hear you. But find one anyway. Ask about their rates and what your insurance might cover and what your actual out-of-pocket cost would be, because I promise you it's not going to be as much as you think it is. It's probably less than a new wig or, you know, some the last pair of shoes you bought. You know, so just check into it and find out what the cost is going to be to you. All right? And when you find a counselor or therapist, just show up on a consistent basis. You know, maybe the first session, they'll give you some feedback on whether you want to do this weekly or biweekly or once a month or once a quarter, whatever you can afford, whatever you're comfortable with. Just start somewhere. A good place to begin is Talkspace.com, which is our sponsor for tonight's episode. So Talkspace is going to connect you with a licensed therapist right from your phone, right from your laptop. You don't have to worry about waiting rooms, no traffic, none of that. There's going to be real therapy that's on your terms, okay? So just go to Talkspace.com and really find out some more about their services. It might be a good fit for you, okay? Now, here's something simple that you can do, but it's powerful. Get yourself a small hand mirror, okay? You probably already got one. Or you can stand in front of your bathroom mirror. It doesn't matter, but I found that a hand mirror works a little bit better. Every day, I want you to look at yourself in the mirror. Look at yourself in the eyes and say three things. Say, I love you. It's gonna sound and feel weird when you do it, but just humor me, do it. Look in the mirror and say, I love you. I'm proud of you. I forgive you. Don't worry about how weird it feels and how weird it sounds. It's going to get easier every day. But if you continue to do it on a daily basis, maybe even a few times a day, you will notice a difference, okay? The other thing, and I talked about this in other shows, I want you to start a gratitude journal. Write down at least 10 things you're grateful for every single day. Doesn't matter if you do it at night when you wake up at night when you go to bed or in the morning when you wake up. Doesn't matter, just as long as you do it and make it a practice every day. This practice, what it'll do is going to rewire your brain to notice what's going right in your life instead of fixating on all your problems and what's going wrong. And if you do it long enough, you're going to start to attract more things to be grateful for. Trust me, it works. I've lived this. I've done it. I still do it. Lastly, for those of you working through unforgiveness, I know that's a tough one. I want you to try this. Every morning when you wake up and you say your prayers or whatever, I want you to picture in your mind three people. You don't have to be three, but usually three people who you just can't stand. I'm talking you just can't stand them. I want you to visualize their faces and silently in your mind, just send them peace and love. I don't care if they don't deserve it or you feel like they don't, just send them peace and love when you picture their face in your mind. And I know you may not mean it at first. It may feel fake. Do it anyway. And repeat this daily. And then watch. I'm telling you, watch how your energy starts to shift. You may not reconcile with that person. You know, you might still feel some type of way, but trust me, you will heal from that. And sometimes out of nowhere, that person might just reach out and offer an apology or finally show the growth that you never thought you'd see. But I encourage you to try that. These are free things that don't cost you nothing, right? That's healing. That's freedom. Okay? There's some couple of other things that I want to go to. I might have to do another a part two of this show, but I'm going to go ahead and close this show out. But listen to this. At the end of the day, I just want you to realize that healing is not a destination. It's a choice. It's a journey. It's a daily journey. Some days are going to be easy. Some days are going to be hard. But the moment you decide to stop running, you're going to create space for yourself, and you're going to create space for the peace that you've always been praying for and the peace that you deserve. Okay? So really think about everything that we talked about tonight. I want to thank you for spending this hour with me. I hope something I said stirred something in you and gave you some clarity, or just simply reminded you that you're not alone. Healing is messy, okay? Growth is uncomfortable, but both of those things are worth it. So be sure to join me next week for another powerful conversation. It just might change the way you see yourself and the world around you. It's going to be the same place, same time, Wednesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Artist First Radio Network. Until then, everybody, take care of yourself. Don't be afraid to have the conversations that matter. Peace and love to everybody. See you next week.